Jesus is the new high priest. We covered this extensively last week, and we don't need to repeat. But we learned a little bit that part of the job of the old high priest is to keep the law, teach the law, interpret the law, judge by the law, sacrifice animals in accordance to the law. It's the law that frames the high priest's workload, and it's the law that becomes the solid ground in which the high priest stands. The high priest is a big deal, but today we need to see, so is the law. The law is exactly what you think. It's the orderly system of rules and regulations by which Israel chooses to govern. But how it came about, that's an interesting story. In Genesis, God makes a covenant with humanity. This covenant is signaled for Abraham. Genesis 12, 1 through 3 says this. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed. This covenant is the most important theological claim of the Old Testament, bar none. It says, God is our God, and we are God's people. This covenant gets constituted by the formation of the law, which makes the law the single formal basis for the redemptive relationship between God and us. The law is what saves us, and it started with just 10 commandments. In Exodus 20, Moses descends from Mount Sinai carrying two stone tablets that contain the rules in which life will be governed. 10 laws to shape God's covenant with humanity. And as the priestly role unfolds, and that's what we learned last week, so does the interpretation of these laws. And just like our laws today, these ancient Hebraic laws, they need interpreting. For instance, one of the laws says you're not allowed to covet your neighbor's property. That's the law. Well, that's all well and good, but what happens when your neighbor abandons his crops, leaves his family, remarries another woman? Are we really coveting his abandoned property at this point? The Ten Commandments don't say. They don't cover it. Has the land not been forsaken by the landowner? Is it not fair game at this point? Who decides? Who gets to choose whose land this is and whose not? Who becomes the judge? The priests do. And it's this kind of splicing and questioning of law that happens, it happens all the time. So as life unfolds, so does the expanse of the law. It started with just 10 commandments, but it explodes to 613. And these laws, they regulate everything. There are laws that regulate leaders, laws regulating kings. There's laws about judges, the judicial system, and what the correct way to be a witness is. Laws about law enforcement, laws about being a sanctuary city to refugees, laws about prophets, laws regulating the army, laws on respecting criminals, laws defending crimes against society or sexual morality or individual persons. There's laws dealing with crimes against property and stealing and blackmail and loan fraud. There's laws about weights and measures for currency. They didn't have dollars and coins. There's laws about lost animals and property disputes and boundaries and how we treat defenseless animals. There are environmental laws. There are human rights laws. There's laws on how to treat children who don't have a family. There's laws about marriage and hired servants and slaves and aliens. There's laws regulating property rights, lost property, damaged property, unsafe property, land ownership, and inheritance disputes. And the list goes on, but I'll stop. Deuteronomy 4:2 tells us this: you must neither add anything to the law or take anything away from it, but you are to keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which were charged by God to you. So here we are, all these laws, all these regulations, someone has to chronicle them, someone has to scroll them, someone has to memorize them and interpret them in order to teach them. Guess who does that? The priests. They become the arbitrators and interpreters of the law. They read it in worship. They study it in school. If you want to be redeemed by God, you follow the law. The law is the single, formal, redemptive relationship between God and us. Or at least it was. And that's the preacher's point in Hebrews today. Thanks to Jesus, we have a new covenant. Thanks to Jesus, we have a new judge. Thanks to Jesus, we have a new process that redeems us before God. And this is what our text in Hebrews 7 is unpacking. So I want to walk through it again, starting in verse 23. Furthermore, the former priests were many in number because they were prevented by death from continuing in office. But he holds the priesthood permanently because he continues forever. The preacher is making a case here for how one man, Jesus, can replace all those priests. If you remember your history, Abraham's descendants expand across Israel into 12 tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel. 11 were given land, and they were given laws. But there was one tribe that didn't get land. They were given something different. They're the Levites. The Levites are the chosen priestly class. They're the descendants of Aaron. They didn't have land, but they were scattered amongst the 11 other tribes, destined to become judges and priests. And there's a ton of them. So exactly how does the preacher in Hebrews reconcile that Jesus, one man, gets to replace all of them? It's simple. The old were many in number because they kept dying. But Jesus suffered unto death and conquered death. And now Jesus permanently holds the priesthood forever. Verse 25. Consequently, Jesus is able for all time to save those who approach God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. In other words, Jesus is available to administer the role of high priest for eternity. At any point, from any place, you can make your way into God's holy of holies, and Jesus will mediate on your behalf. No appointment needed, no blood needed, no sacrificial animal needed, no ritual needed. Jesus suffered all unto himself, and because of his suffering, we get access to God. Verses 26 and 27 make this point clear. It was fitting that we should have such a high priest, holy, blameless, undefiled, separated from sinners, and exalted above the heavens. Unlike the other high priests, Jesus has no need to offer sacrifices day in and day out, first for his own sins and then for those of the people. Because he made one sacrifice, he offered himself once and for all. No appointment needed, no blood needed, no sacrificial animal needed, no ritual needed. Jesus suffered all unto himself, and because of his suffering, we have access to God. Verse 28. The law appoints as high priests those who are subject to weakness, but the word of the oath, which came later than the law, appoints a son who has been made perfect forever. This is the linchpin in this argument of high priest and law. The old law appointed the old high priests. It was sustained by the old Levite tribe. It gave order and direction and hope for a time, but the old law, it died out. It was the single formal redemptive relationship between God and us, but not anymore. Because it had a huge weakness. It was supposed to be followed by humans. To be redeemed by God was supposedly simple. You just keep the law. But we couldn't do it. We failed all the time. The story of Israel is one failure after another. It shows us the reality of the human condition, that we are sinful, unreliable people who fail time and time again. This redemptive law was supposed to be our safety net, but we kept failing to keep it. We kept severing our covenant with God all the time. So God had to make a new oath. Verse 28. I love this line that God sends us a new oath. God enacts a new formal redemptive relationship between God and us, and it replaces the old one. This new oath is not held together by 613 laws that are being interpreted and administered by priests. It's being held together by Jesus. We don't have to live up to the old law, and we don't have to be judged down by it either. Jesus comes not just to replace the old priestly class. He comes to rewrite what draws us into a redemptive relationship with God. That's what the preacher in Hebrews means by saying that Jesus is our new high priest. He is for us our new redemptive relationship. We now look to Jesus to teach us and to help us interpret love. We now look to Jesus to enter into a formal redemptive relationship with God. So a big question jumps off the page. What exactly was the oath? What exactly did Jesus do to enact such an oath? It's this. Jesus placed on the heavenly altar, once and for all, both his own life, and astonishingly, he placed on the altar our lives too. He gathers up our failures, our egos, the entire human condition, and places them next to him as an offering to God. But instead of us bleeding out on the altar like a wounded animal, Jesus' new oath takes our ravaged, broken humanity, the world that we created for ourselves, and instead of killing it, he heals it. That's the oath. that Jesus heals our brokenness, that Jesus sets us free, free from the law, free to be just as God intended us to be, free to engage life as a joyful, hopeful person who is one with himself and others and God. This is the new oath that Jesus redeems. He is so much better than the old priests. And what we learn from the preacher in Hebrews, he's also greater than the old law.